This is Audible.
Harper Teen and Harper Audio present The Loneliest Girl in the Universe by Lauren James. Performed by Lauren Ezzo. Life is very much more exciting now than it used to be. You see, I have something more to expect, to look forward to watch. Charlotte Perkins Gilman, The Yellow Wallpaper. Liftoff for first manned interstellar ship. 6:26, 2048. Cape Canaveral, Florida, USA. Early yesterday morning, NASA successfully launched the first ever manned spacecraft designed to travel to a different star system. The spacecraft, named the Infinity, is projected to reach the star system Alpha Centauri in less than 50 years, where it will enter orbit around planet HT-3485C. This exoplanet has a 99.999% probability of being habitable, making it the highest scored planet outside our solar system. The Infinity is the result of billions of dollars of investment into solar sail technology. Space travel using this method of propulsion allows the craft to accelerate to the previously impossible velocity of 0.09 light-years. Current calculations predict that the Infinity will reach planet HT-3485C in early 2092. Once in orbit around the planet, the Infinity will begin 18 months of analysis to determine whether the planet's surface can safely support human life. If planet HT-3485C is deemed unsuitable, the Infinity will continue onward to the nearest star system predicted to have an above 99.99% chance of habitability. The main mission of the Infinity is stated by NASA as being to guarantee the long-term survival of the human race by founding extraterrestrial communities outside of planet Earth. The crew of the Infinity were chosen in a grueling, decade-long application process that analyzed every aspect of their personal and genetic history. This screening process was followed by 5 years of intense NASA training. The Infinity will officially pass out of our solar system at 22:54 Eastern Standard Time tomorrow. Check back for live minute-by-minute updates on the launch. Click here to learn more about the crew of the Infinity or follow their journey via the official The Infinity social media accounts. Don't forget to register to vote in the global referendum to name planet HT-3485C. Read about the new commercial stasis service that is promising to help civilians live long enough to see the Infinity land on planet HT-3485C. Days since the Infinity left Earth. 6,817. I'm reading fanfiction in my pajamas when I hear a nightmarish sound. The emergency alarm. Pulling an oxygen mask out of the nearest wall panel, I sprint to the helm with my heart in my throat. There's a glowing red message on the screen, which reads, "Asteroid collision imminent. Automatic trajectory adjustment failed. Engage manual control." I'm abruptly filled with complete and utter fear. The guidance system has crashed. I need to take manual control, otherwise we're going to be hit by an asteroid within the next few minutes. For what must be the millionth time, I wish that Dad was here to help. I try to calm down, taking slow, steady breaths as I tell myself that I'm brave enough and strong enough to do this. And even if that's not true, I have no choice but to do it anyway. There's no time to panic, no time to do anything except go. My attention narrows. This is something I've practiced. I've been in simulations using force propulsion to minutely adjust the course of the ship since I could count.
Dad trained me to operate the emergency program in case there was a problem that he couldn't take control of himself.
He joked that if there was ever an emergency before 7 a.m., I would have to deal with it. Because he wasn't giving up his lion.
I do exactly what I've practiced in the simulations, and use the joystick to line up the thrusters with the propulsion metrics on the screen. The Infinity is traveling too fast to slow down much, but a minute adjustment of direction is all that's needed to make sure the asteroid misses us, if only by an arm's length. I check and agree to the trajectory angle calculated by the computer, and initiate the adjustment. I watch the screen, waiting. Outside the ship, precious fuel is being used to shoot nanoparticles into space. The force of the blast into the vacuum of space will turn the ship and change the trajectory. Or, at least, it's supposed to. I have no idea if it's working. If, for some reason, the propulsion thrusters don't work, or they respond too slowly, we could fly right into the asteroid. I just have to hold on and hope the ship can move in time. Minutes pass. Eventually, when I've long since started to brace myself for bad news or a horrific explosion, the alarm dies down and the screen clears. Collision avoided. I sigh in relief. By the time the asteroid nears the Infinity, our course will have been adjusted just enough that we narrowly pass each other. I run to the nearest porthole to watch, hopping from foot to foot. It's coming too close. Impossibly close. Glimmers of metal catch the light in the rough, uneven surface of the rock. Its shadow reaches me first, passing over the porthole and casting me into darkness as the asteroid approaches. For a second, I think that the computer must have calculated the angles wrong. It looks like the asteroid is flying directly at the Infinity. It's going to crash straight into the fragile hull of my ship, crushing everything in its path. It's going to destroy me. It's going to... Every single muscle in my body tenses in panic, a tight knot spreading from my neck down my spine as I brace for the impact. I watch, wide-eyed, as the asteroid flies past the bulkhead in a graceful swoop. There is no explosion, no crush of metal as the ship disintegrates against the rock. Instead, there's a wonderful silence as the side of the asteroid fills the porthole for 2 heartbeats. There's enough time for me to see craters in the dull brown rock, marks left from millions of years of impacts. The breath leaves my lungs without me noticing. Then the asteroid is gone, disappearing in the wake of the ship, falling off into deep space once more. I throw my head back and spin in a circle, overwhelmed with joy. I did it! I managed to control my worrying long enough to get the job done. I knew what to do, and I did it! It's only when the asteroid is a speck in the darkness, hidden among the bright stars, that I realize I've developed a raging headache. By the time my headache is gone, it's midday, and I'm starving. I sit at the helm in my dressing gown and eat a lukewarm, rehydrated chicken korma, reading through the ship's manuals. The close call with the asteroid has kick-started my anxiety. I worry endlessly about things going wrong. On some days, it's all I can think about. I'll lie, frozen in my bunk, overwhelmed by the responsibility resting on my shoulders. I can't run this ship. Not without Dad. Not on my own. I need to be prepared for the next crisis. I have to know the ship inside out, from the boilers to the propulsion thrusters to the telecommunications and flight mapping. My schoolwork can wait. English literature is hardly going to be useful the next time there's a crisis. By the time I reach page 97 of 14,875 in the manual, I'm losing focus. As I scrape the last few grains of rice from my lunch into the organic waste disposal, I remember I haven't checked my messages yet. I can't believe I've forgotten. Reading the new uplink of data from Earth is usually the first thing I do. Hearing from NASA is always the best part of my day. Often, it's the only part of my day. I scroll through my inbox, skimming past the files of news articles until I reach the message from Molly. From NASA Earth. Sent 6/20/2065. To the Infinity. Received 2/23/2067.
Attachments? UC podcast.zip, 8 megabytes. Worksheets.txt, 20 kilobytes. Audio transcript. Hi, Romy. Hope you're well, sweetie. Have you been finishing all your schoolwork? Your last message said you were struggling with some of the math. I hope you've sorted it out by now. I used to find math really hard when I was at school, too. It'll all come together in the end. I'm sending you some more worksheets in case you've completed the ones you've already got. By the time you read this, I think you'll be working on three-dimensional propulsion mechanics. So that's what the attached exercises focus on. Let us know if there's anything you want us to send. I've also attached a new episode of the podcast you like. It's funny. Enjoy. Talk to you tomorrow. Molly is my therapist and miscellaneous pillar of support. She was assigned to me by NASA after my parents died, to help me deal with their deaths, and my unexpected promotion to Commander of the Infinity. I receive messages from her every day, without fail, to make sure I don't get too lonely. Her first message was 2 hours long. I think I listened to it over 100 times. Maybe more. It was my constant soundtrack for months. I've been alone on this spaceship since my parents died. The last time I hugged someone, smelled their shampoo, or even just spoke to them, face to face, was February 25th, 2062. 5 years ago. Right now, I'm officially farther away from any other human being than anyone else has been since the evolution of the species. I'm pretty sure I've forgotten what other people feel like. When I dream in screens. A line of text. A voice in my ear. Nothing real. The things people take for granted, like seeing the sky, walking on soil, feeling the wind on your skin, well, I've never experienced any of that. I was born on the Infinity. I've only ever known its clean white walls, its sterilized atmosphere and artificial gravity, its gray floors curving around the ship's hull. I circle the same small space over and over every day, and nothing changes and nothing is different. I know I sound ungrateful to be here, but I didn't choose this life. Just because my parents were clever and multi-talented enough to be picked to run the Infinity doesn't mean I'm anything special. I'm nothing like they were. I should feel proud that my parents were chosen to run this mission. I should be proud to be the first human to land on a planet and create a new civilization. I get to carve out a new home for humanity among the stars. But some days it's hard to remember the exciting parts. I get stuck in the memories. It's hard to focus on the future when the past is so distracting.
Days since the Infinity left Earth. 6,818.
The next morning, the computer sends me an alert.
Health reminder. Within the next 24 hours, please complete 40 minutes of aerobic exercise, 10 repetitions of 8-kilogram weight exercises.
It's an exercise day. I exercise on alternate days, and while it isn't the absolute worst thing in the world, I suppose, it's just so boring. Mainly because of the endless running. There's nothing to look at. I just circle the corridor around the entire circumference of the ship until I'm allowed to stop. At least while I lift weights, I can watch my favorite TV show, Locke and Ness. I stretch out my calves so they don't cramp, then begin to jog down the corridor. I could do this with my eyes closed. The ship looks like a giant wheel, rotating as it flies through space. The centrifugal force of the rotation creates a feeling of gravity inside. The helm and the living quarters are around the outer rim, where you'd find the tire on a wheel. The stores are located in the center of the ship. The only sign of the ship's rotation from the inside is the portholes. When you look through them, the stars spiral around themselves over and over and over. It makes me dizzy to look at them, especially when I'm running. I jog past the kitchen and the bathroom and the bedroom and the lounge area and the helm and dozens of other rooms until eventually I find I've circled back to the kitchen. Then I do it again. On good days, which don't come often, I love my ship and everything it represents. I thrill at the thought of seeing Earth too. There are going to be so many things there that have never been seen by human eyes before. I'll get to study the planet using priceless, brand new equipment that's just waiting to be unpacked. I'll discover things that might change the fate of humanity forever. The Infinity is the biggest, most expensive scientific mission in history. I get to be the very first person to see the results. I'm so lucky. On bad days, I worry about my responsibilities until my gut cramps and my head feels full of knives. On my very worst days, I think of nothing but how vulnerable I am out here. I'm balanced on the edge of oblivion with only a fragile skin of metal separating me from the void of space. My only choice is to carry on into nothing, until the day that the Infinity reaches a new star system and glides into orbit around a rocky planet. If the planet turns out to be hostile, if there's scorching radiation from its two suns, or an atmosphere fierce enough to turn my lungs black, then I'll be lost. I'd have to make the decision to keep going to the next hospitable planet, which might be many years extra travel away. There would be nothing to do but wait and hope that the ship reaches a safe haven before I starve to death. If I never find a habitable planet, I'll be trapped on this ship until the metal grows old enough to weaken and crack. The oxygen would be sucked from my delicate home, and when that finally happened, maybe it would be a relief. An end to the pointless existence of waiting for death from the day I was born. Who thought it was a good idea? A life of never seeing a horizon or standing on solid ground. This whole journey is a balancing act based on faith. We're all just hoping that the Infinity will eventually be able to reach somewhere safe. And for what? To satisfy the great human spirit of exploration? My life is a gambling chip thrown carelessly across the universe in the hopes it'll land somewhere my descendants can survive. I represent the culmination of centuries of human achievement and exploration. But who cares if my name goes down in history if no one remembers who I really am? After 40 minutes of circling the ship, I stop at the bathroom to have a shower. Then I check my inbox. I've been hoping that Molly will send me the latest novel from one of my favorite writers. Maybe today will be the day. An ebook arrived from Molly last week by another author I like, but it's set in space, so I don't really fancy it. I used to read loads of science fiction, looking for characters like me, but it was all so wrong that it just made me feel more alone. Now I read a lot of romance novels. I like the simple ones, set on Earth. Stories that revolve around coffee shop dates and walks in the countryside. My fanfics are always set on Earth, too. Museums and thunderstorms are so much more exciting than rocket ships and supernovas. When I play Molly's new message, she sounds excited, in a way I've never heard before. From NASA Earth. Sent 6/21/2065. To the Infinity. Received 2/24/2067. Audio transcript.
Romy, I have some big news for you today.
We didn't want to tell you until it was all confirmed, in case something went wrong and we got your hopes up for nothing, but I've had permission from the team here at NASA to tell you that a new spacecraft has just been launched from Earth.
Ever since the tragic accident on board the Infinity, NASA has been building a second interstellar spacecraft to follow the Infinity to the new home of humanity on Earth 2.
If we could have built and launched this ship any sooner, we would have. It's a huge regret to everyone involved that you've been alone for as long as you have. As propulsion technology has significantly developed since your ship left Earth 19 years ago, the Eternity can travel at much faster speeds. The Eternity launched successfully 3 days ago, and after a gravity assist around Jupiter, it is now traveling at over 0.72 light years, which is 8 times faster than the Infinity. Romy, by the time you get this message, the Eternity is calculated to be only 1 year away from the Infinity. Once in situ alongside your ship, the two ships will combine and continue together at the increased velocity of 0.72 light years. You will arrive on Earth 2 on 7-15-71, as opposed to the original estimate of 4-2-92, a difference of over 20 years. To be clear, the Eternity is a support for the Infinity. I don't want you to feel like you're being replaced. The spacecraft contains a significant gene bank for many species, elemental stocks for 3D technological printing, and a large supply of vacuum-packed food for use on planet while agriculture is still being developed. However, your mission to establish a settlement on Earth 2 will still be orchestrated primarily using the Infinity's equipment and operating systems. I know this is a huge change, and it might take time for you to come to terms with the news. I hope, eventually, you will be as excited about the Eternity as we are. Take today to process the idea, and tomorrow I'll send some exercises that will help you to work through your feelings in more detail. I want to make sure that you don't let this affect the excellent emotional progress you've been making recently. What?
What? A new what?
A second ship is coming, fast. I'm not going to be alone anymore. I'm going to have someone. There's another ship coming in a year. I only need to wait 12 months. I break out into giggles, leaning back in my seat and smiling at the ceiling. I'm not going to be on my own anymore. And the ships will reach Earth 2 much more quickly. I've gained back years of my life, time that I thought was lost in transit. I'll only be, I counted out on my fingers, 21 when we arrive on Earth 2. I was supposed to be in my 40s. I can't believe it. I actually checked to make sure I'm awake, because I'm sure I've had this dream before. Another ship. It's the best news I could ever have imagined. Who are they going to send? Who's coming? I stare out of the helm window, straining my eyes against the infinite blackness, pressing my fingernails into my palms so hard they sting. I can't see anything except the silver pinprick stars. How long until I'll be able to see the Eternity? How long until it will be able to see me?
Days until the Eternity arrives. 365.
The next day, when I listen to Molly's latest message, I brace myself for news that the Eternity has crashed, or that it was all a joke and there's not another ship at all. That it was some kind of test to see how I'd respond mentally. I can't quite make myself believe it. Another ship after all this time!
From NASA Earth, sent 6-22-2065, to the Infinity, received 2-25-2067.
Attachment, the Eternity Mission Outline.pdf, 1.3 gigabytes. Audio transcript?
Hi, Romy. I really hope you're happy to hear about the Eternity, sweetie. The scientists here at NASA have been working tirelessly to ensure it's a successful mission, and to get the ship launched as fast as possible. I think that knowing you aren't so isolated will help you to manage your anxiety. I know it's a lot to take in right now, so I'd like you to write a list of emotions that you felt when you heard the news. Everything you are going through is completely valid. Anger, joy, fear, it's all normal and reasonable. If you want, send me back a voice message telling me how you're feeling. I've attached a full document with details of the mission and the Eternity's timeline. So when you're ready, you can read up on everything about it. I can't stop smiling long enough to eat my breakfast, a packet of beige goo that supposedly resembles porridge. Will they send another couple, like my parents? Or have they decided to send someone alone, since that went so disastrously wrong last time? They probably can't risk another pregnancy. One person is safer. I let myself get caught up imagining they're sending me a handsome young man, but that seems too fantastical. Whoever it is, at least I won't be on my own anymore. I'm not going to be on my own ever again. I'm going to have to share my space with someone else. That's going to be so strange. What if I hate it? I feel restless, thoughts jumping back and forth until I can scarcely focus on anything but the new ship. As a distraction, I decide to write a fic. I know Molly wants me to write my bad feelings down properly in a diary, rather than writing fiction, but that would be too real. I'd rather escape into the world of Luck and Ness, where there's Jaden Ness. My favorite person, even if he's only fictional. There's kissing in fics, too. Lots of kissing, in every alternative universe. I always send my fics to Earth, but I don't think anyone reads them except Molly. Back when the Infinity was new, before I was born, there was a lot of excitement and curiosity about the launch of such a long-duration mission. Dad used to say that he and my mother were treated like celebrities. But it's been so long since we launched, everyone must have lost interest by now. Damsel in Distress by The Loneliest Girl. Fandom, Locke and Ness, 2042. Relationship, Lyra Locke / Jaden Ness. Tags, Modern Day AU Alternate Universe. Summary, Jaden is Lyra's knight in shining armor. Author's note. I had a bit of a catastrophe recently. An asteroid nearly hit the ship, but I managed to stop it at the last second. It was stressful. Anyway, here's what could have happened. Instead of me trying to fix the problem on my own. Where's my handsome rescuer, please? Lyra was texting when she first became aware of the shouting. She looked up to see a car swerving across the street, slipping on the wet tarmac. It was heading straight toward where she was walking. She froze in her tracks, knowing she should dive out of the way, but unable to make her muscles react. The car was getting closer. Suddenly, there was a pair of strong arms around her, pushing her sideways, and she was falling just as the car skidded past them, colliding with a garden wall. When Lyra realized that she was uninjured, she let out a breath, relieved and filled with adrenaline. She peered up at her savior, lying on top of her where they had fallen. It was her neighbor, the hot one from upstairs. He had brown eyes, sparkling golden in the early morning light. There was a quirk to his smile, like he was trying to hide his amusement.
"You're okay,"
he said, his voice a low, calming murmur in her ear. "Relax." Lyra sagged under his very solid chest. "Thanks," she said, her voice cracking in an embarrassing way. I'm Lyra. Jaden, it's great to meet you, neighbor,
Jaden continued.
I just wish we were meeting in less exceptional circumstances. She'd never felt so relieved.
The tension in her stomach, which had been building in a tight coil since she'd realized she was in danger, dissolved into nothing. With Jaden, she was safe. Finn.
Days until the eternity arrives. 364.
My inbox doesn't contain any voice messages today. Instead, there's an MP4 file. A video. I stare, too confused to open it. I can't think of a reason why Molly would send me a video clip instead of an audio message. NASA has always said that it's too expensive to send that much data. Transmissions to and from Earth are sent by laser, encoded in binary. An antenna on Earth conveys the laser beams to the infinity, where a light array picks up the signal and converts it back into letters, images, or sounds. The uplink from Earth takes a long time, and apparently video files just aren't feasible to send. It takes hours for the antennas to transmit them, compared with the minutes required for audio or text messages. What's changed now? I've got a nervous tickle in my stomach at the thought of seeing Molly's face. It'll be the first time I've seen a real human in years. I eye up the file while I eat breakfast, brush my hair, and get dressed. I tell myself that I've got no reason to be worried. This is new and exciting. It isn't scary. That doesn't stop the itching concern at the back of my mind. Eventually, I sit down, take a deep breath, and click play. At first, the screen is black. Slowly, it turns gray, and then white. Dark letters that I've seen more times than I can count appear. Luck and Ness. As the familiar theme tune from the opening credits plays in the background, I double-check whether I've somehow opened a file from my hard drive instead of the message. But it's right! NASA has sent me an episode of Locke and Ness! Why would they transmit an episode of a TV series to me, especially one they must know I've already got? It takes me a stupid amount of time to realize why the first scene seems unfamiliar. It's a new episode. Suddenly, I'm grinning. They've sent me a new episode of Locke and Ness! A new episode! Molly must have finally found an excuse to send it to me like I requested years ago. When I was 10, I asked Dad to ask NASA for more episodes, as I'd just finished the 7th series, which ends on this massive cliffhanger. The characters, two supernatural detectives called Lyra Locke and Jaden Ness, had just kissed for the first time. Unfortunately for me, the Infinity had launched before the 8th series aired, so it wasn't on the ship's hard drive. In their reply, NASA said that they couldn't send me any new episodes because video files were too large to transmit across interstellar deep space. Instead, they sent me a file full of Locke and Ness fanfic. It's the single best present I've ever received, especially because it arrived just after my parents died. I read the entire archive and then started writing my own. I watched the new episode without taking my eyes off the screen for even a moment. Jaden Ness, the puppy-eyed and long-legged mixed-race Selkie, and Lyra Locke, the no-nonsense, feminist Banshee, are trying to track down a fairy selling illegal love potions. The new series must have been filmed a few years after the ones I've got because Jaden looks a little older. His muscles are more filled out, and there are a few laughter lines around his mouth. He looks good. I screenshot a few scenes, setting a picture of Jaden as my wallpaper. I replay his best lines, listening to the dialogue on repeat until I've memorized his latest witty one-liners.
By the time the credits roll, I'm giddy with happiness and excitement. I've already thought of 3 new fics based on this episode alone. I'm about to watch it again when I notice the message origin. I shoot upright in my chair, reading it twice just to make sure. The video didn't come from Earth at all. It came from the Eternity. The new ship is talking to me. It sent me an episode of my favorite TV show. Why? Why would they bother using their transmitters for this? It must have taken hours to transmit. And why didn't they send me an actual message, even just to say hello? I don't understand. My gratitude has dissolved into a mess of confusion and nerves. Someone on that ship knows I like Locke and Ness. They know that much about me, when I know nothing about them. I should reply. I open up a message addressed to somewhere other than Earth for the first time ever. I stare at the blinking cursor, trying to decide what to say. It hadn't even occurred to me that I might be able to talk to the crew of the other ship. I type, "Thank you." I quickly delete that and then feel like an idiot. This shouldn't be hard, but for some reason I feel shy. What if I say the wrong thing and make a terrible first impression? Should I be formal and polite or funny and relaxed? This would be so much easier if they'd sent me a message first. Then I could just copy their tone, instead of having to try and work out what to say myself. From the Infinity, sent 2/26/2067, to the Eternity. Predicted date of receipt, 6/8/2067. Dear the crew of the Eternity, I received your transmission today. Locke and Ness is my favorite show. Thank you so much. Congratulations on your successful voyage so far. I trust that everything is progressing safely with your journey to date. This message is going to take almost 4 months to reach you. But I'm glad that we can communicate at all, regardless of the time delay. It's nice to know that I'm not alone out here. Commander Romy Silvers. I reread the message 3 times, finally deciding that while I definitely sound awkward, I don't sound as stupid as I could, so it'll have to do. I send it off, then firmly tell myself not to think about them again. They're still closer to Earth than me, so it'll take months for a reply to arrive. I should try to relax about it, at least for now. I used to be able to have reasonable conversations with people back on Earth. The ship has been traveling away from the solar system at just under a tenth of the speed of light for my entire life. So even though light is the fastest thing in the universe, messages currently take over a year to travel through deep space between me and Earth. And the delay increases every day. At this point, it's almost impossible to have a proper conversation with anyone on Earth. When Molly finally receives my messages, even if she replies immediately, it still takes another year, plus the extra distance I've traveled since I sent my message, for her reply to arrive. Though at least I get messages from her every day, even if they are out of date. When I was little, messages would only take a few months to reach Earth from the Infinity. I was too impatient even then. At least as a kid, I had Dad to talk to. He used to send me letters when I got really annoyed with waiting for replies from Earth. Letters. On actual paper. Or rather, an old flattened food packet, which was as close as we could get. Which he would hand to me over breakfast. It would always be something silly, like a formal invitation to play a game of hide-and-seek after lunch. Complete with scrollwork, calligraphy, and a hand-drawn stamp. Whenever I replied, it would never look as beautiful. However hard I tried. I miss Dad. I try not to think about my mother.
An hour after I've sent off my message, an email arrives from the Eternity. For a second, I think it's a reply before realizing that's impossible. But they must have sent the message straight after the episode for it to be arriving now. From the Eternity, sent 6/26/2065. To the Infinity, received 2/26/2067. Dear Commander Silvers, I'm delighted to be opening up an official line of communication between the Infinity and the Eternity, since, in relative terms, we're now neighbors. As there's not an established protocol for how to enter into communications between the only two manned spaceships outside the solar system, I thought that an episode of Locke and Ness would be a welcome opening gambit. I look forward to receiving a response from you in 2 years, which is how long it will take to receive a reply, according to the Eternity's computer. I wish you a safe journey. Yours sincerely, Commander J. Shoreditch. The guy on the other ship. It's a lovely email. It's a bit awkward and formal, but then so was my email to him. It's a thrill talking to someone new. I'm rereading the message, trying to decide what to say in reply, when I remember that I already sent a reply to the episode of Locke and Ness addressed to the crew of the Eternity. I don't want Commander Shoreditch to think that I'm ignoring his email, or I'm too rude to talk to him directly. I quickly access the transponder, trying to cancel the transmission before it sends, but it's too late. The message is already gone, shooting through deep space. I need to send another email explaining as soon as possible. From the Infinity, sent 2/26/2067. To the Eternity, predicted date of receipt, 6/8/2067. Dear Commander Shoreditch, I apologize for my last message. I hadn't yet received your email when I sent it. It's very nice to meet you. It's strange to think that by the time this message reaches your ship, you will only be a few months' travel away from mine. I hope that the two ships can unite and work together to make our journey as easy as possible. I look forward to hearing more from you in the future. Commander Romy Silvers.
Days until the Eternity arrives. 363.
Today Molly has sent me an email instead of her usual voice message, which catches me by surprise. From NASA Earth, sent 6/23/2065. To the Infinity, received 2/27/2067. Hi, Romy.
We have some bad news for you. Recently, NASA has been finding it difficult to gain enough access to the Deep Space Network telecommunications antennas to send you any large transmissions. Unfortunately, the Infinity has just been ruled a low-priority mission by the International Board. This means that using the DSN to transmit high-memory data, such as audio files, is no longer considered a valuable use of space agency resources. From now on, only email communication will be possible, except in unavoidable circumstances. Meaning that I'm not going to be able to send you any more voice messages. Unfortunately, we also can't send any music or podcasts. The Advisory Council thinks that this will only be a short-term issue, and it is likely that we may be able to resume our original broadcasting schedule in the future, once the political climate changes. I'm sorry. Molly. No more audio. The quiet happiness I've been carrying around since I found out about the Eternity drops away. I had no idea this was possible. It's a scenario I've never even worried about. And I've worried about most things, realistic or not. The farther away the Infinity travels from Earth, the longer it takes for messages to arrive. I know that. I've accepted it. But to get no audio messages at all?
It's all I have.
Why would my mission have been ruled as low priority all of a sudden? Have they decided that since the Eternity has been launched, it isn't worth spending any more money on me?
Now that Commander Shoreditch is around, clever, competent, and NASA-trained, there's no point babysitting me anymore. I know that I'm the worst possible person to be responsible for an interstellar spacecraft. Even if NASA would never tell me that, it's the truth. They would never have actually chosen me to command this mission. They've only spent all this time looking after me because they had no other option.
NASA has always sent me everything I could possibly want to read. The latest scientific papers and newspaper articles, books, blogs, Twitter feeds, medical journals. I could read all day and never get through all the information that comes from Earth. I've tried. Is that over now? Are they slowly cutting the ties between me and Earth completely? What if I never hear Molly's voice ever again? What if I've lost her along with the voices of everyone else on Earth? I should have enough already. I know I should. My hard drive contains every TV show, book, and video game made in the 21st century, as well as thousands of songs, apps, and podcasts. I have nearly every YouTube video and an entire archive of Locke and Ness fanfic. I have Commander Shoreditch now, too, I remind myself. At least he can still send me episodes of Locke and Ness. That should be enough entertainment to occupy a human for an entire lifetime. Shouldn't it? From the Infinity. Sent 2/27/2067. To the Eternity. Predicted date of receipt 6/9/2067. Dear Commander Shoreditch, I got a worrying email from Earth today. Apparently there's something happening that means they can't send any audio files for a while. Did you get the same message? Do you know what's going on? I guess there's no point in asking, seeing as you won't read this message for months. Hopefully it'll be fixed before you reply to this anyway. I just needed to tell someone. Commander Romy Silvers. I'm so jumpy for the rest of the day that I manage to catch my thumb with the scissors when I'm cutting the top off my lunch packet. Blood spills over the dried noodles inside, and I quickly wrap up the wound in my sleeve, pressing hard to stop the bleeding. Get a grip, Romy. I need to calm down. It's just voice messages. It's not that big a deal. I use a first aid kit to bandage the cut, even though it's already stopped bleeding. Afterward, I eat my noodles, picking out the blood-covered ones as I take a walk through Google Earth. I click down a street, not really thinking about anything, just absently taking in the trees and street lamps and parked cars, frozen in time in the decades-old recording stored on my hard drive. It doesn't really make up for not being able to walk there myself, but sometimes, if I'm lucky, I can trick my brain into thinking I've actually been for a walk. On those nights, I'll dream of Earth and wake up happy, stretching out in my sheets, trying to grab onto the tendrils of my dream and keep them. Make them real. There's a girl on the pavement, an old phone to her ear. As I click along the street, she turns and watches the camera as it passes. It's like she's staring right at me. She looks like a ghost, moving through the series of sequential photographs that tie together to make the Google Earth images. I click back and zoom in. She looks around my age, maybe 15 or 16, with red hair, a long fringe, and bangles around one wrist. I wonder what her name is, who she was talking to on the phone. I wonder if she remembers the day that a Google Earth car drove past and she turned to look, Her picture, caught in their records for all eternity. I wonder if she knows who I am. I take a screenshot and leave her picture open on the screen while I tidy up. I stare at her, imagining the conversation we might have. "Excuse me," I'd say. "Sorry, I know you're on the phone, but I was wondering if you knew the way to the cinema?" I've always wanted to go to the cinema. It looks fun. Popcorn. Slush puppies. "I'm Romy. What's your name?" She doesn't answer.
Days until the eternity arrives. 362.
I'm feeling a little happier by the time my emails arrive the next day. It's no big deal, I decide. Sure, it was a shock at first, but I know that I can live without audio files. It was a nice bonus, but it isn't vital. Then I read Molly's latest email, which is in text format again. From NASA Earth, sent 6/24/2065. To the Infinity, received 2/28/2067. Romy, I'm afraid that the situation with the Deep Space Network has worsened slightly. We will be completely out of communication with the Infinity for the next 3 days. There's nothing to worry about at this stage. It will definitely not impact your mission. This is purely a political matter. International disputes have unfortunately affected the control of the DSN antennas, but this should be resolved shortly. I will keep you informed as to how things unfold when communications resume. If all goes well, I will be able to catch up with you soon. Molly. Molly's messages usually feel like a soft, steadying touch on my shoulder. This one feels like a punch. I have no idea what the message means. What is Molly talking about? What is happening? I try to keep track of Earth politics by reading the latest news reports, but it's so hard to understand what's going on between countries on a planet I've never been to. There's a cultural shorthand that I just don't understand, full of terms like stock market futures and electoral colleges and FDA regulations. It's a foreign language with a whole vocabulary that I have no way of clarifying. Besides, by the time it reaches me, the news is all out of date anyway. I send off a quick reply asking for more information, but I know it's hopeless. It'll be ages before I get an answer. I hope that whatever is happening on Earth doesn't last long. I need Molly. From the Eternity, sent 6/28/2065. To the Infinity, received 2/28/2067. Dear Commander Silvers, I apologize for getting back in touch so quickly. I had assumed that outside of emergency scenarios, we wouldn't need to use the communication systems between ships regularly. However, today I received a message from NASA Earth saying that transmissions are stopping for a while. I wonder whether the news raises the same warning bells for you as it does for me. It seems odd that transmissions would be cut off only a week after my ship is launched. What if something goes wrong with the Eternity while it settles into the voyage? I haven't prepared for this in training. I admit that I may have skipped some of the more unlikely emergency procedures. I really don't think we're going to come under an alien attack anytime soon. But I think I would have remembered anything that mentioned the possibility of cut-off data transmissions. It's really effed up, if you'll excuse the language. Regards, Commander Shoreditch. P.S. I can't believe NASA has a line in their coding that censors swear words. Doesn't that go against the First Amendment? Can you swear in your transmissions? From the Infinity, sent 2/28/2067.
To the Eternity. Predicted date of receipt, 6-10-2067.
Hi, Commander Shoreditch.
I got the message too. I agree, it's unsettling. I don't know what I'm going to do without my messages from Earth.
It's never happened before.
Did they give you any more information about why it's happening?
Oh, why am I even asking? You can't answer.
Romy Silvers.
P.S. I don't think I've ever tried swearing in a message before, so here goes nothing.
Shit.
Huh? Looks like it's only you who's censored. NASA must have updated the telecommunications software after the Infinity was launched.
Sorry.
P.P.S. Do you think my dad had a habit of swearing in his messages? Was NASA so offended that they introduced censorship settings? That would be very funny. If so, I apologize on his behalf.
Days until the Eternity arrives. 361.
I can't seem to do anything today. The news from Earth has thrown me so off balance that my chores seem pointless. I need to change my bedding, finish my schoolwork, check the status of the gene bank, separate my rubbish into different materials for recycling, and prune the plants in the sunroom, as well as about 30 other things. But I don't want to. I don't want to read anything, or practice my piano chords. I don't even want to rewatch any films on the hard drive. I've seen nearly everything on the hard drive, except some of the more grown-up stuff which I accidentally found when I was 13. I suppose it's unethical to send astronauts into space without some source of sexual outlet, but the videos just looked gross to me. Even the kissing, which I usually think looks lovely, was all wet and nasty-looking. In fanfic, it's always much nicer. I don't know what to do with myself. I wrap my blanket around my shoulders, wandering through the living quarters and rearranging things at random. I pick up a model of the Infinity that I made from food packets when I was 4. It's one of the last times I can remember doing something fun with my mother, before everything went so badly wrong. The model is bumpy with spots of glue, the thick, green paint peeling away from the plastic surface. The ship is a spinning circle, see, Romy? My mother had said, while I applied homemade glitter and paint. The spinning makes everything stay on the ground instead of floating in the air. Can you point out the engines? I push away the memory, annoyed at my brain for reminding me of her. I move the model from a shelf in the kitchen to a low table in the lounge area, then decide it'll get in the way there and move it back. I change my toothbrush to a new one, then remember I only replaced it last week. It would be a waste of resources to get rid of this one already. I fluff up my pillows, tug the edges of the bedding straight, and pick a dead leaf off the basil plant on my bedside table. I put it in the kitchen bin, ignoring that it's overflowing already. Taking it to recycling just seems so much work right now. Finally, I give up any attempt at productivity and sit on the floor of the lounge area. Legs dangling over the edge of the padded gray sofa set low into the floor, I eat 3 packets of dry cornflakes in a row, until my mouth is too parched to chew anymore. I trace my fingers over the edge of the sofa, where the shaky letters of my name are carved. I don't remember doing it, but it must have been me. On the underside of my bunk in my bedroom, where it folds into the wall, there are pen marks in permanent marker showing my height, with my age neatly written next to them in Dad's meticulous handwriting. The last time he measured me, he shook his head sadly. When I asked him what was wrong, all panicked that I was getting shorter instead of taller, he said he was worried that soon I'd be taller than him.
But then I'd be the one in charge of getting things down from the top shelves.